Welcome to Architecture Talk Tongue. I am Sarah Colara, an architect and organizer of the Disrupt Symposium, the first of its kind business of architecture event, bringing to stage major architecture practices to cover topics related to entrepreneurship and practice operations within the AEC industry. I am an architecture business development consultant, and my goal is to raise the financial well-being of architects through effortless business growth. Each podcast episode features an expert or thought leader from the AEC industry who shares their journey, challenges, and advice. Now, let's dive into this episode and welcome our guest for an exclusive interview. Wonderful. Thank you so much for this. So let's maybe start with, I know you're an architect, you also run a practice. Tell me a little bit about that and about your career in teaching and teaching at universities.
Yeah, it's funny. A lot of people ask me how I do it. I'm still trying to figure it out.
Right, yeah.
Like it's juggling time between what is really sort of full-time teaching. I have two courses usually per semester, usually a big studio and a seminar that I teach. At Parsons, in the springtime now, I usually do the our design workshop, which introduces students to design build, has in the past. It's changed slightly. We've taken on more of a planning, community engagement role during the pandemic, which we've continued. And then with the practice, I'm fortunate that I have a partner. So, and a great studio director as well. So between the three of us, we're able to we're a small practice. We are 10 people. And so we manage, pretty well. I like to say we sort of punch above our weight. So we're involved in a lot of different projects, but we're able to do that, I think, because we partner. There's a few different projects we're working on now where we're, doing strategic planning on Governor's Island for their residential district with their arts and arts programming, and how to adapt or reuse on some of their assets, some of their buildings and landscapes they have. And so we're doing that with Claire Weiss and WXY. And then we're also working on a couple of developer projects, and we're doing that with MA, Morris Adjmi's office.
That's tremendous. I love this. And you're obviously very passionate about teaching. You said you run two courses at university. Tell me a little bit more about that path of your career.
Yeah, it's funny because I come from a family of teachers. My grandmother was a teacher, my sister, my aunts, my uncle. And so when I first got offered, I think the first time I got offered a teaching role was probably about, many years ago now. I'm trying to figure a number, probably about 18 years ago now. And I thought I was maybe too, at that time I thought, I'm too busy in practice to really take on any kind of teaching and what time that would require, but it'd be cool. But then a couple years after that, an opportunity came up, and it was to do a professional practice course at UPenn, where I had been a student. And I knew that course pretty well. And I knew it was about introducing students to practice, to different types of practice, to corporate, to mainstream, to alternate practices that do different things, whether into fabrication or, data, all kinds of different things. So I thought that I could manage. And so I did that for a number of years at UPenn. And that was really a good experience for me. It really, you know, I started off really just, I had to learn to teach, you know, because it's, and my sister kind of said that she, when I told her, I was like, hey, I'm going to be teaching. She said, she's a teacher, early childhood development. And she was just like, look, you're just remember you're there for the students and it's not about you. And so I was like, oh, okay. And so I've learned to kind of over the years, you know, be there, try to understand, teach to, try to meet where each student where they're at, rather than try to do just a, you know, this is the level everyone should be at, you know, because not everybody starts in the same place.
Right.
And so to get to that level, you got to work where the student is and where their knowledge base is and how to at least sort of get them, if not there, as close as possible. Right. Yeah. They're coming away with some kind of outcome, some kind of learning outcome. And, you know, the professional practice was good because it really allowed me also to do research and look at what, at a time in my own, in our own practice where we were trying to figure out things, it let me actually walk in the door and look at how other people were practicing, which was kind of interesting. At the time, I thought I would write about it, but it became my own sort of personal research and for the class. And then I stepped away from that for a year. And then the director at the time, Andy Bernheimer at Parsons, asked me to come back. He was like, I need you to teach a professional practice course. And I was like, and he goes, I know you really have done that for a few years and it would really help if you could fill in for an instructor who was away and couldn't teach. But he was like, but you have to teach his material. And so I had to sort of quickly learn the way this professor was teaching and the readings and everything that he was doing and teach it the way he would teach it, which was interesting. And after that, he was like, well, Andy, I think felt like he owed me, you know, like, thanks for doing that for me. So he found me some other teaching roles. And then eventually that led to me into applying for a full-time position. And ultimately, when I applied for the full-time position, what was interesting was they were, the committee that I interviewed with, the teaching committee, was like, I got one question. It was just like, so when you run the program, how would you see restructure? I was like, what? Run the program? They're like, oh, yeah, by the way, everyone takes turns cycling through. And so this new position, you'd probably be right up, you know, you'll probably become director of the program almost immediately. Which I had no idea, but they at least gave me a year to kind of get my feet under me. And then I took over the program, which was really great. It took me away from teaching. It was more administrative. I did that for what became like about 4 years, 4.5 years. And that was really good. That was really good because it really let me see how the methodologies, the different ways people were teaching. It was the same way as like with professional practice where you could sort of slide into people's classrooms and see how they were teaching, you know, what their focus was, how that made sense with the larger picture of what the school was teaching. What were we teaching architects to be? How were they coming out? And I think it really geared me toward like, we need to be doing, I've always said that architects have bad, like doctors have bad bedside manner. Need to listen more, need to learn to listen. Listening is a skill that you have to really learn, and how to engage. And so that engagement and community engagement became something that was like, I saw as being an opportunity, as well as thinking about some of the things that some of our instructors like David Lewis was teaching in terms of in our healthy materials lab about how to think about the future and materials for building that weren't, you know, petrochemicals healthy and long lasting. And so we started doing also research into materials. And so those things actually for me came together with our design workshop. So that became about the engagement part and as well as the materiality and material culture. So yeah.
That's tremendous. I love it. Tell me a little bit more specifically about some of the takeaways that you want students to get out of your practice courses. Obviously, there is sort of a global issue with academia not really preparing you for practice if it comes to business acumen. Very few universities teach business. And, I'm sure you can appreciate that with business alone, if we look at, strategic planning and concepts about sort of creating a trajectory and designing your future, you set a goal and you define your milestones and you get there. And the thing that it's sort of missing in our industry, whereas to students know that the next step is going to be getting into a practice, but then also what's common for beginners in practice is that they end up doing a lot of card monkey work and long hours, unpaid internships and all that stuff. So we almost know what's next step for us as we finish our education. It's really hard to specifically know what it takes, what are the skills I need to obtain in order to advance into more meaningful roles in the practice, especially when it comes to leadership. And so it's almost like we're at a disadvantage, not being able to really plan our trajectory of our career and not being in control of that because it depends on so many factors. And similarly, so as we enter the workforce, we don't really fully understand what it takes to even advance in a given office because, again, offices don't usually take the new workforce that enters the office and says, okay, look, it takes about 5 years in here to then advance here, et cetera, et cetera. You need to have these types of skills to become a leader. And so again, if you don't know where you're going and if you don't know what's your goal and if you don't know what it takes to get there, it's almost like you're blindly just facing the reality of day to day showing up. And at some point, I think it's harder for people to step up and say, look, I've been doing this for 8 years, I want to be somewhere else or whatever. And I think that certainly has affected generations of architects going into workforce and not really. If it didn't take an opportunity or someone to be exhibiting certain skill sets to be able to be, advancing into leadership, it's very hard to say what it takes. Some people went into education, and now we see more and more practices employing people at leadership roles that come from a different background than architecture. In fact, come from business, for example, and so that's definitely a testimony to, to how. These practices are also trying to strengthen their ability to lead the market through different skill sets, that can be obtained from other fields. But it's not to say that to be a leader in an architecture practice, you're at a disadvantage after architecture school. You want to know what it takes to also educate yourself in business and get the other skill sets necessary. So again, teaching all these courses, right, at the university level, I'm sure is covering a lot of dynamics of not only understanding how to advance your career, but also the systems it takes and mindsets for business. So extremely curious about some of the takeaways and some of the important messages that you want people to get out of the course as they enter the workforce.
Yeah, well, I think I can simplify it into really sort of two main points that I usually talk to students about. The first, that given that I was educated in a pre-internet world, and now the students are in a wholly different environment.
Architecture Talk Tank is sponsored by the good people at Integrated Projects, a team of architects and technologists focused on the digitalization of the built environment. Did you know that there are more existing buildings in this world than websites, yet only 0.0001% have been digitized. In response to this, the Integrated Projects team launched BIMIT to digitize any space imaginable. Offices, homes, mechanical spaces, you name it. Now any architect, engineers, or reality capture specialist can convert their 3D scan into LOD 200 BIM, just in hours, not weeks or months. Why does this matter? Well, now we can accurately view, verify, and quantify the spaces that we design, build, and operate. To learn more about BIMIT, visit www.integrated-projects.com/Sarah Collada.
So I try to explain to them the pace of things is faster, right? And so whereas I used to give advice that was sort of like, you're young, you have time, try different things, see what interests you. I feel a lot more, things feel a lot more hurried than that. And usually I tell students, the research that you do, the ability to look, like you can just look things up and really get a feeling or get some answers, or you can actually find connections very quickly and hear from someone that works in a place what it's like to be there, right? Given that if you have sort of a larger open network of people that you know or start to know or start to connect with. So I usually tell the students, like, look, if you have an interest, if something is really exciting to you, the idea of how you want to practice or what might seem like it's not connected, like I have an interest in history and specifically African-American history. And my projects have started to tend toward some of those, toward that interest, right? But that's not by chance. I've had to actually move in that direction. It's required me to sort of put myself in a place where I have the opportunity to do those things. So I usually tell students, put yourself in a place where you know that you're going to be moving toward the opportunities and the interests that you have. Don't just take something and go, I'll do this for now, or I'll just sit here and, you know, be a CAD drafter and just, you know, I'm just drafting, I'm just doing these plans, or I'm doing bathrooms, whatever, all day, and think that you're going to somehow translate that and go to, because that's just what it is, you know. So you actually want to try to put yourself in a place where you're actually moving toward your interest and you're working and you go into work excited about the things that you're going to do that day, or know that you have a longer plan that this is a part of, right? Because not everything works for you. Some things you might do and you have to throw away and then you go on to the next thing. And it just feels like you think you have time for that, but you really don't, right? And if you put in your heart, like, don't just go for something because you have to. Now, I say that it comes from, that might be the hardship and probably what we do. Because I say that from a place of privilege, but it's not like I haven't done that myself. Like where I know something's not, early on in my career when I knew something wasn't right for me and I had to step away from it, and it would have been safer to maybe stay there, and I needed the income and I had rent to pay and all of that sort of thing, but I knew at some point I was always going to be okay, and so that I had to give myself permission to follow my interests and see where it was going to take me, because that's life, right? I think the other part of it too is then that there's not a lot of one of the things that's taught in architecture school is, you're right, actually tends away from you know, the idea of business, and somehow it's like, oh, that goes in the bucket of things like when you get into practice, you'll learn about it. And I don't believe there's anything that shouldn't be touched on in your education that you should be surprised about later. In fact, you should, with my co-instructor, we always talk about like students are preparing themselves in the classroom. It's practice. You're practicing for the future you want to see, right? You're trying to build that space of the future in the classroom. And that's practice. And so you, in all ways, you have to kind of think about how is this going to be, what is this model? How is it different? What am I trying to achieve here when you do a project? It really kills me when a student just does something that's very, what they believe to be normative and not challenge the perception or idea of it, right? Of an idea, just something as simple as, well, it's a door. If it's language, if I say a door, oh, we all know what a door is. It's a door. What kind of door? Is it a glass door? Is it a French door? Is it a sliding door? Is it a rotating, pivoting door? Is it a, you know, it's like, oh, well, I wasn't thinking about all of that. And there's just so much to take in it, but you always have to be questioning those things. And I think when it comes to business, it just seems so like it's some other person's game and not ours. When the very thing you do if you actually go into practice is you have to, you're opening a business, you're an entrepreneur, right? You're opening a business. And so you really have to learn the sort of basics. I get calls still from students that I taught professional practice to many years ago. And they're at the point where they've opened practices and they're like, hey, how do you do this in a contract? Or what do they mean here with the liability? Or how could I actually turn this opportunity into something in terms of, you know, licensing or ownership over the design, and that it's not, you know, that every time they go and do it, I have to be involved and all of that. And so those are things where I see that all as part of design. I see that all as part of the education. You know, it's like, I get excited about, it's weird. Sometimes students are like, you get excited about contracts? And I was like, yeah, I get excited about contracts because in the same way I'm excited about design, it's laying the groundwork for the thing we're going to be doing, you know? So there's so many possibilities there that you want to make sure that it's open enough and it allows you to explore the possibilities. And if I described a contract in that way, you know, would you think about it as a contract? Or, you know, it's like, it's a design exercise, right? It's as if anything else we do with the project, it's a part of the project. I think that we, you know, you also have to just be aware that there are things that happen in a practice, especially when you're younger and you don't really get to see a lot, but you should always keep your eyes and ears open and understand, you know, where the, how the firm sees itself, where you're practicing, you know, how they position themselves in the market, what kind of work they're going for. That's the other thing I was going to say in this other bucket is, you know, if your interests are in a certain place, then is that firm doing project types that are of interest to you? Because I've had students say, I'm interested in cultural and institutional work. And then I was like, why are you working for this residential firm? And it's like, oh, well, because I just, you know, I took the job and I got it. But I love to get over and work for it. And I was like, you're going to have a hard time at some point in after 8 years or something, you're going to have a hard time making that transition over. Because people will start to pigeonhole you. You're going to be known for a certain, you know, your portfolio represents this kind of work. And if that was your interest, then you should have followed it earlier. That's not to say you can't make that transition, but you do have to, they don't realize you have to take a step back and somehow find ways, other ways to get yourself back into that path.
This episode of Architecture Talk Tank is brought to you by the MGS Global Group. a team that provides on-demand CAD and BIM drafting, as well as renderings for architecture firms. In today's environment, with everyone experiencing a surge in projects and staffing challenges, MGS Global can deliver your drawings on time and within your budget. So why work with MGS Global? Their customer service is exceptional and they provide quality for value. They have completed over 5,000 projects worldwide, a testament to their work. Now you can focus on design and let MGS do the rest. Check them out at www.mgsglobalgroup.com.
Absolutely. And in terms of just simply obtaining information and building on business acumen, what do you recommend for students to do?
To definitely like read a lot, to actually follow, like look at what happens in other, I think also looking at what happens within other in other sectors, like and say in technology, because a lot of them always reference technology. A lot of our students reference their friends run into technology, and you know, with like venture capital and all of that, and what have. And I was like, there's something to be learned there. You know, it's like, yeah, they're getting all this money and they're creating, you know, but what's the product in the end that they're creating? Or how are they marketing around the idea? Or how are they, what language are they using to describe in terms of marketing the thing that they're doing? You know, so there are things to sort of pay attention to, because they're things you can learn from that you can actually apply to what you're doing.
That's right. That's interesting. I think it's really important to be fair, for anyone who sees themselves as an entrepreneur starting a practice or going into leadership, to read a lot, to expose themselves to a lot of ideas, and really just like develop skills, because there's a lot of soft skills and also skills in respect of like understanding strategy, business strategy, that are needed for these type of roles. And do you have any commentary as to the fact that like universities somewhat are missing out on that element of like preparing, young professionals to practice and really like encouraging leadership as well as entrepreneurship to start your own business, especially in the early age? Some comment from my side is that, you know, if it's expected from everyone to go into practice, when do you take the leap of faith to start your own? Because to be fair, no matter how many years you've followed the trajectory of working for other people, the moment you started on your own, you don't really have the rights to use the portfolios of other practices to say, oh, I've done this or that. So therefore, you're always starting from zero. You're always going to have to start building your own portfolio so that you can show the clients what you do and not what some other huge practice you worked for does. And so therefore, you know, there's this whole catch 22 of, yeah, you can get all the experience in the world working 15 years for a practice or I don't know what, but at the end of the day, whenever you take a leap of faith of starting your own, you're starting from zero. So it's almost better to start early, even with smaller projects, and start building from that. But that's just not something that students are encouraged to do oftentimes. And so, you know, that's kind of, I feel, a challenge, especially for the people that either come from entrepreneurial families or have that skill set or that sort of drive within them, the hunger to make success happen for their own name. And then, so therefore, you know, it's definitely a challenge. It's hard to answer for the whole industry. It's hard to answer for why is that the case in our industry. But do you have any comment about that?
Yeah, I think... I'll say that there aren't enough business, the business of design, the business of practice, isn't taught early enough. It's not like, it's almost treated as a little taboo, like it's going to somehow, we're teaching students about design and it's going to distract them from the thing, whereas they have these other courses, like their technology courses that are around construction and structures and materials and history and theory. And in the same way, I think also teaching business and early on helps them begin to understand the sort of basics of how, you know, how the world operates in a way. That's one of the biggest things, one of the biggest lessons for me coming out. And I think I took two professional practice courses in my undergraduate. And yet I came out and it took me a while to actually realize that our industry was based around, and this was from actually talking with contractors, that our industry was based around the cycles of the economy, right? We're on that wave. Things start, you know, the economy is doing well, interest rates are low, people are borrowing money, money flows, things happen. And then there's the bust where it starts to go down, you know, and during that time, the work that one of the, and the forefront of that is like AEC is architecture, engineering, construction is construction, right? Construction is not happening. So then architects aren't working. And then you're sort of doing smaller projects or waiting for the next wave to kind of come. And it's funny because I've known a lot of people, that's been the time when a lot of people have started their own practices because they're, you know, the work fell off. They either got laid off or there wasn't enough for them to do. And they read the signs and they stepped away. And then they realized they could sort of do it on their own. And then as the next wave came, they were positioning themselves and ready, right, to sort of tackle that. So I think what becomes important, especially if you're later, if you've worked for a little while, if you're no longer, or, you know, moved away from being a student or a grad, you have to learn differentiation, right? I think one thing is a lot of students fall back on the trope of what they've been taught at school is like, well, I'm a great designer. Well, you know, you're going to say that in front of a potential client, they're going to be like, I know every architect that we've interviewed came in here and said that, but what makes you different? You know, it's back to that point of where I was talking about the bedside manner, like of listening, of not only listening, but there's hard skills like hearing what something that a potential client in an interview is telling you and being able to let them know that they're heard and sort of say that back to them. And some people think that's like, it's almost like when you're doing a presentation and people tell you to be like, I'm going to talk like this and I'm this and I'm like, I'm very loud and I have hand gestures. And some people, when you see that on its own, people are like, that's corny. That looks ridiculous. That's silly. But it's effective. You know, it's like we know that from how many TED Talks do we watch? It's effective, right? And so it's like what's effective becomes actually stating those things back that you've heard from a client. And that's just a simple, very simple way, a simple gesture, just saying, I hear you. I've heard what you've said. Not only have I heard what you said, I've processed what you've said, and I'm giving it back to you. You know, that's just one example. There's small things like that that you can do that are about differentiation, about how you come in probably better prepared. You know, you have to be really prepared. And there's no reason also, I tell students, there's no reason why you haven't looked up everything you can on the internet on when you go in for an interview. You should know more about that practice than, you know, hey, congratulations on that award that you just got. That was fantastic. I was really like, and that you're among all these other great, this firm is with so-and-so and name off the three previous winner. That's impressive. That without them even saying anything, you've let them know, like, I know who you are. That's why I'm here.
Yeah, exactly. Tremendous. Thank you so much, Mark, for your time. It's been really an honor chatting and listening to your perspective. I also think that your work, and I think I highlighted it with my questions and commentary, is extremely necessary and unique and keep up the good work. And yeah, thanks again for agreeing to the interview, as well as being a friend on social media for such a long time. And I'm always looking forward to reconnecting.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Architecture Talk Tank has its own frequency. We're not a regular podcast, but we are here for you, always. If you have a suggestion for a guest or have a story that others in this community can benefit from, please contact me via social media or email me directly at me@saracolara.com. To sign up for my newsletter, simply go to the website saracolara.com. I am on Instagram, YouTube, and LinkedIn. You can find me by typing my name, Sara Colara. Come say hi. I'm always excited when you reach out. Bye for now, and see you in the next episode.